Welcome to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.
Hi, listeners. I'm so glad you were able to join us. We're in part two of Winnie Davies, and my co-host is Mary Perro. Mary, I'm so glad you could join me in studio today. Do you want to take us up to speed
on
Winnie Davies? It's kind of a test to see how much you, because I heard the other day that people only retain 5 to 10% of what they hear.
Don't worry, listener. I have been taking notes for you. So we're learning today about Winnie Davies, who is a Welsh missionary who was inspired to head out into the mission field by Edith Moles. But she also, her testimony, her story later inspired Maud Kells, who we heard about a few weeks ago on the podcast. So she went to, back to Winnie Davies, went to the Congo for the first time, really at the tail end of World War II.
Exactly.
She was there for about a year and then had to take a furlough.
Six years.
Check off. Okay. She was there for 6 years, came back for a furlough, but she's just now returned. So in her missions work, the thing that we've been talking about, really enjoying about Winnie, is she's really tough, but also really tender and really sweet. She's really practical about her faith and her nursing work. But she's so full of joy that the people she's serving have named her
Mama Fura.
Yeah, Mama, Mother of Joy. It's just such what a beautiful thing to be remembered by. So we're just hopping back in. It's 1955. We're back in the Congo with Winnie Davies.
Right. And when she got back and was serving in Nebubongo, by this time, a woman named Dr. Helen Rosevere had come to Nebubongo, and her specialty, Dr. Helen Rosevere, was maternity and delivering babies. So Winnie felt like she wasn't needed. Not like she's like, oh, I'm not needed here, but she began to long to go to a place where they didn't have any medical care, where she could really be of use. Like, who are the people who need something and they don't have anything? And so she was told of a place called Opienje. And that was the furthest outpost of the WEC. It was the one that was furthest away from kind of the what had become then the hub of the WEC in the Congo. So it was some 260 miles. Now, when you say 260 miles, it might not sound that bad until you realize the condition of the roads and how bad it was. And just to get from Nebubongo up to Opienje, you had to cross on 72 different bridges. Now, that sounds like, oh, crossing a bridge. Most of the bridges were just logs that were put across these rivers, these crocodile-infested rivers.
Oh, my.
And so these cars had to balance on these logs that were just, that just spanned the rivers. Mm. That's what the bridges were. So there were 72 of those bridges, as well as a really rough, rutted roads. And so it took quite a long time. When she first got there, she worked alongside a couple named the Browns. And one of the things that astounded her about Opienje was that the ground was so white. The soil was white. And she said it had been red in Nebubongo and where in Wamba. But here it was just white, almost glistening, she thought. So she's very excited. She thought it was beautiful. The small town of Opienje actually had a few stores, and right outside the town, there was a rice factory owned by a Greek trader. But inside the town, there was a Belgium administrative office and a flagpole. That's going to become significant as we get further into our story. And then a half mile down that road was the mission station. So the Browns remembered Winnie as always singing. When she was on her bike or wherever she was always singing at the top of her lungs. And that she also, what her children remembered, is that Winnie made the most delicious cakes and cookies. And that she could make them out of the most scant ingredients. In fact, you were never quite sure what was in those delicious treats, but they didn't care because they tasted so good. Winnie was never without her beloved typewriter. She loved to type letters home, and she was known for letter writing. In fact, the only night that she missed prayer was her letter writing night.
Oh, I love that.
And the only other thing that would take her away from the prayer meetings every evening on the mission base were medical calls. Other than that, she loved to pray, as we learned, you know, in our first episode. Yes. Winnie rose every morning early for personal time with Jesus, for prayer, for Bible study. And even though we've painted this picture of this wonderful Mama Joy, she was not without faults. She could easily lose her temper and did not like interference with any of her medical work or her schedule.
Mm-hmm.
However, Winnie was always convicted by her outburst, always. And she was very quick to apologize and seek forgiveness. And she also forgave others just as wholeheartedly and just as quickly. And it was said that she never held a grudge against anyone.
That's really beautiful.
Yeah. Aren't you glad she's human?
Yes.
In 1957, she was doing medical work and training of young women at OPNJ. And she was also making plans for the building of a maternity block for the hospital. Winnie went without. She lived on the scarcest ingredients, just saving all of her support so she could build this maternity hospital. By 1959, it was finished except for windows and doors. When Winnie opened the dispensary for training nurses, she was able to treat 200 patients and also give classes on post and antenatal care.
So she's built a maternity ward and created an entire nursing program to train other nurses.
Right.
That's incredible.
Yes. And by this time, the Browns were on furlough, so she was doing it mainly by herself.
And probably not without a lot of resources.
Mm-hmm. So Winnie was able by this time to obtain an Opel car. Do you remember Opels? I don't know if you're old enough.
No.
Opel is a German-made car. My sister at one point wanted to get an Opel. They're pretty small, but it was the only car she could get. It was low to the ground, and it really wasn't suited for the Congolese rough roads, and they said you could feel every bump in every road. But it did not deter Winnie. She would often pick up sick patients and transport them to the hospital and the maternity ward that she built. Winnie always prayed for her patients. There were even some miracles, too. A 15-year-old boy who was near death, after Winnie prayed for the boy, he immediately revived. He was healed. Another baby had pneumonia and was not expected to live. But Winnie prayed, and that baby was healed.
Wow.
On Sundays, Winnie often cycled to the neighboring villages to preach and evangelize. She sang so loudly as she rode that often once she got there, she was hoarse. On Sunday evenings, she went to the prison to preach and minister to the prisoners. Now, the greatest threat to Winnie on the mission at that time was a group called the Kitawala. And they were a secret cult of witchcraft with vile practices and many taboos. It was also anti-government and anti-Christian. The National Army would periodically round up the Kitawala and put them in concentration camps. Well, Winnie was so concerned about those people that she would actually go to those concentration camps, minister the gospel, and led many of the Kitawalas to the Lord. In 1960, the Congo got their national independence from Belgium, but it was a time of terrible disruption. Because what happened is the national government decided that they wanted control over all the factories and all the farms. So they either killed or they drove out all the Belgians. They just said the white people who were living in the Congo, as many as they could. And they were indiscriminate when they did this. But they also then killed the Congolese that had cooperated with the factory managers and with the factory owners and on the farms. And that, therefore, thousands upon thousands of people lost their job because there was nobody to manage, nobody to administrate, or who knew how to, because these people had only been workers. So great starvation and disrest entered in after this new government was established. And it got very dangerous, as you can imagine, for the missionaries, because a lot of them were white. But the Congolese in Opienje loved Winnie so much, they vowed to take care of her and keep her safe from all of the rebellion. One of the groups at this point was a rebel group called the Lumumba. And they began to sow disrest among the villages near Opienje. They came to the mission station. They would barge into her home or the hospital without consent, without warning, take a seat. And then they would become very rowdy and try to cause a disturbance. 4 days after Independence Day, the National Army itself revolted and rose against any white officers that were left. They arrested them. They maltreated their wives in the presence of the children. They looted their property. Then they held up civilians, burglarized houses. In 1 week, 30 to 40,000 Europeans fled the Congo. Winnie, too, was ordered to leave immediately by the WEC. She left in her little Opel car to the airfield on July 13, 1960. She was joined by 27 other missionaries for a British plane to arrive, but the British plane never came. So these missionaries had to drive 600 miles to the Uganda border. Well, there were ambushes all along the way from the National Army, and it wasn't expected. Nobody else had made it. Other Congolese had been arrested on the way and even shot. And here go these little missionaries, unarmed, towards the Uganda village. But what happened is this torrential rainstorm fell, and all of the National Army hid from the rainstorm. But the missionaries had no problems on the roads. They made it all the way without incident to the Uganda border. So Winnie returned to England in 1960, but from the time she arrived, she was restless for when she could return to the Congo. Dr. Helen Rosevere during this time was still there and unable to get out. In June of 1961, Winnie felt like the Lord had released her to return to the Congo. It was confirmed to her when she read Isaiah 48, 16 through 17. And now the Lord God in his spirit hath sent me. I am the Lord thy God, which leadeth thee by the way that thou shouldst go. And even though she had these furloughs, she was never idle on these furloughs. She was always speaking and teaching and ministering and even befriended these invalid patients at a hospital. One of them was Braylon Thomas, this woman who didn't have any friends until she met Winnie. And she would later become one of the greatest supporters financially of Winnie. Isn't that wonderful how God uses the poor and the sickly to do these wonderful things? Before Winnie left, she gave the only message that was ever recorded at her church in the hometown of Koidpoth. I'm going to give you an illustration of the Church of Christ in Congo. It is a wonderful church, she said. I might even dare to say that it is a much better church than in this land. By this, I'm not talking about the bricks or mortar. We are the living church. I am part of the living church. You are part of the living church. And there is another part of it out there in the Congo. That church has been founded on the Word of God. I go to homes in this land, but do I ever see the Bible? Very, very rarely I do. And I rarely see it in a prominent place. There in the Congo, the Bible is a book that they love. The Bible is a book that is fingered and that is dirty and greasy because those dear people haven't basins to wash their hands with soap. They haven't even the money to buy a basin. When those dear people travel, they don't have changes of clothing. They don't have all sorts of luggage with them. But the one thing they always carry is part of the living church, which is this book, the Bible. It must go with them. If they are getting old, they also must have their glasses with them. This is the thing, friends, which has made the Church of Christ in Congo a stable church, a valiant church, a triumphant church. It is founded on the book. Isn't that amazing?
Beautiful.
When Winnie returned, she had very little in the way of supplies for herself. Her suitcase and even her carry-on was filled to the brim with as many used eyeglasses as she could take back to the Congolese people. She was afraid her luggage was going to be overweight, but when they got there and weighed, it was a little bit underweight, and she was so upset that she hadn't grabbed more glasses. Arriving back, Winnie had to travel 700 miles through Kenya and Uganda to return to Kampala. There she picked up her opal, and the Lord was with her, and by a miracle, she was able to get her permit and re-enter the Congo. There were some days of delay to getting OPNJ as she waited for the WEC to approve her return. "If trouble and persecution come again, I will not leave," she said. "I will stay even if it means death." There were no missionaries able to return with Winnie to OPNJ, and Winnie was unfazed. "If I do not get back, I will be ill." But she had to wait. So during her time of waiting, she worked at the hospital in Nebobongo. She evangelized in the marketplace and the villagers. Finally, WEC approved her to return for 3 weeks. When she returned, the people were ecstatic when they saw that little opal pull up. The time went quickly, and Winnie promised to return. In fact, the people said to her, "Why did you leave us? We would have protected you. Why did you leave us?" When she did return, she was the only white woman within 100 miles. Winnie later found out that she was not the only one appealing to the WEC for her return, but the people in OPNJ had begun to write and besiege the WEC with lots of letters and messages for the return.
That's lovely.
Of Winnie. By 1962, Winnie's opal was not making it on the deeply rutted roads. Since the Greek factory owners had left and the Belgian business owners had left also, the roads had worsened. Winnie's opal was low to the ground and the deep ruts became too much for the little car. Winnie lamented her inability to get out to the villages and pick up the patients. In fact, she had to repair her car all the time, and often her instrument of repair was wire.
Wire and prayer.
It was suggested to her that she get a Land Rover. With determination and help from her friend, remember Braylon, she began to find out how much she needed and what she needed to get a Land Rover. So she finally was able to save enough money, and they raised enough support, only to find out that there was a long, long waiting list. So she wrote a letter to the Land Rover company telling her them why she needed it. Well, again, food began to be in more scarcity. And Winnie wrote back home and said she had even begun to eat elephant meat because they were so desperate for food. By 1963, Winnie could no longer get any subsidies like sugar, milk, and flour. By April of 1964, after writing directly to the Land Rover, she heard from her church that they had acquired the Land Rover and would send it in July. However, the car was delayed again, and Winnie felt that this was also the Lord, since all the cars in the area had been stolen by armed marauders.
Oh, my.
Winnie went to a conference that year, but was again anxious about leaving the people in OPNJ. The precariousness of the situation, rather than making Winnie want to seek safety or to go back to Wales, compelled her to want to stay with the Congolese people in OPNJ and bring security and comfort to her friends. In 1964, the Simba uprising hit. Now, Simba means lion. And Pierre Mulele from the Congo had led a revolt in the province of Kwili. Pierre had been trained by the communists in China, and they returned to the Congo for just such a purpose. He lost no time in recruiting the disenchanted, the hungry, the desperate, of which the country was absolutely full. Then he armed them as young as 12 and 13 years old with spears, bows, arrows, and guns. He preached to his new recruits returned to witchcraft and told them that the bullets of the National Army would not penetrate their bodies but would turn to water. And so often the Simbas were heard chanting, "Mai, Mai, Simba, Mai, water, water, Simba, water."
Mm.
After 5 hours of fighting, Opienje was taken in August of 1964. Mulele would announce his arrival before he entered a village in order to strike fear. Often the message was accompanied by human flesh, and he would send this message: "This is going to happen to you if you resist me." The intimidation worked, and the national soldiers fled. The people scattered, and he was able to take Opienje. The Simbas entered on the back of trucks when he remembered seeing them covered in leaves and holding rifles. They rushed first upon the mission compound and immediately arrested Winnie. They aimed their spears at her and Pastor Alini. However, Pastor Alini stood in front of Winnie, protecting her. One of the Simbas threw a spear at Winnie, but miraculously it bounced off her hand. It looked like certain death, until their leader, Mulele, called a sudden assembly in the center of town, and the Simbas were forced to leave. Winnie then went to the government office to show them her papers. But the next day, more rebel soldiers poured into the compound and shot Winnie. But it passed through her dress and only grazed her hip.
Oh, my goodness.
Mulele arrived just as the soldiers were tying up Winnie and Pastor Alini and preparing to beat them. Mulele halted them and had this Simba responsible for the abuse tied up and beaten. Then he demanded money of Winnie. She gave him all that she had. 2 days later, the Simbas returned and grabbed Winnie and Pastor Alini. They paraded them to the government office. Mulele wanted to know what was going on. Well, there was a woman who was head of the Simba party who said that Winnie had not attended the meeting, so that she was anti-Simba. Well, Pastor Alini testified on her behalf that she had been delivering a baby at that moment. And Pastor Mulele said, "I don't want to hear any more of this." And he actually gave Winnie the sanction to go back to her work at the hospital and promised her safety. Not only promised her safety, but that she could continue everything that she was doing and he would give her protection.
So they were shooting at her not too long earlier, and now they're offering now she's protection.
Offering her protection,
wow.
Right? And he also insisted that she treat many of the Simba soldiers. When Mulele left Opienje, though, the situation once again became very threatening. During this time, a Dutch priest, the only white Catholic left in the vicinity, and Winnie became close friends. He would visit her monthly to check on her, and the two would talk and pray together. The National Army demanded the surrender of Opienje, and so an adjunct Simba in charge of Opienje put up a white flag in anticipation of the arrival of the National Army. However, there was a General Ngalu of the Simba army, and he arrived instead, and he ordered the immediate execution of the Simba adjunct. As the Simba adjunct was about to be executed in front of, I'm going to have to leave it there. We're down to 1 minute, so I'm going to leave it there because it's so exciting.
Cliffhanger.
It's a cliffhanger. Maybe I could just finish this story, but there is so much more to come. As he's about to die, he asks that Winnie come to the administrative offices. They bring Winnie, and he shouts really loudly that he has decided to surrender his life to Jesus Christ. And he asks her in front of everybody to lead him in the sinner's prayer. She does. He gets saved and shot and goes to heaven.
Oh, my goodness.
What a story, right? Well, there's more to come. There's much more to come. And we're going to hear in part 3 about how the Lord sustained Winnie through all of it and what will happen.
What a story.
What a story. There's more to come. So everyone's really going to want to stay tuned to this last part about Winnie Davies, because it's so, so good and so inspiring. In fact, the book I read said, don't read this book unless you're prepared to be inspired. And that's what I'd say about this podcast. If you want an easy life, this is not the podcast for you to listen to. Or the episode.
Thank you for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not-so-well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.